Welcome back, folks. Good to have you with us here. We're about to have a conversation about the licenses that will be granted to grow, package, and distribute medical marijuana in the state of Maryland. To get an update on where this process is headed, we talk with two people who are among the 150 who are seeking licenses to grow medical marijuana. The conversation is not here to advocate for anybody or our guests, just to hear where the process is and why it's taking so long to fulfill. We're here in the studio now with John Cardin, who's a former Maryland State Delegate. He represents one of the groups, Green Labs, Inc., and the CEO and founder of that group, Demetrios Kaforos, is with us in studio as well. Demetrios, welcome to have you here and
good to see you, Mark.
John.
Great to see you, Mark.
So this is, you know, I didn't realize how complex this was until I started reading the articles on the numbers of people, Demetrios, that are going for this.
Tell me, where
are we now and how many people are doing what?
So there's a total of 15 applicants going out to cultivate, 15 to process, and 109 in total that could be for dispensaries.
So, but how many people are applying? It looks like there's lots of applying.
So, yeah, absolutely. There is a total of over 900 for dispensaries that applied, 147 for cultivating, and I believe about 50 or so for processing.
Yeah, that's about right. That's 60.
So this clearly could end up being over the years – whether they legalize marijuana as a whole or not, become a really lucrative operation for numbers of people who get into this.
Absolutely. You know, at this point where the commission is and us as an applicant is we're really focused on the medical side of the business and making sure that we can get Maryland patients their medicine. So is recreational possible? Maybe one day down the road, but – right now, we're just looking at what's happening right now in Maryland.
And the truth of the matter is that the commission has had its work cut out for it for the last couple of years. And what the legislature determined back in when they passed the legislation years ago was that this is really a medical purpose policy. And the fact is that we have to look at this as something that's going to improve the quality of life of all Marylanders, and particularly the Marylanders with the ailments that can be helped by the use of medical marijuana.
So, but it sounds like that to have the ability to apply for this license or any one of those licenses, but especially the either the grower's license or the – what's the second one you
said? Processing.
The processing license. It looks like it's requiring a huge amount of capital.
Absolutely.
So what does that mean? I mean, how does that look?
So for every team, it's different. What we've done, we've put our plans together and we've put money aside, millions of dollars aside, to make sure that we can cover our plans and basically what it's going to take for us to get our product to market. Every team has put a different amount aside, I'm sure, but – you know, it's all about how well your plan is calculated and just to make sure that you're funded properly. Now, in what we've done is we're not a big corporate company. It's a bunch of Marylanders who've gotten together, who put some money together and, you know, just really, really believe in the business and making this come true.
So, yeah, there's lots of different models, Mark. You've got people who are bringing tremendous amounts of out-of-state money. You've got groups that are putting together huge swaths of capital from large corporations. And then you've got the folks like Green Labs that are basically bringing together investors, small investors, a number, well over four dozen investors, I think maybe about 60 or 70 people total, and with small amounts of money. And they're all Marylanders. It's 100% a Maryland-based company that's out there for improving the quality of life of Marylanders. So the question is, yes, do you need to put away millions of dollars? Yes, you do need to raise that kind of money. What we have done as a company is basically tried our best to protect the investment of the folks that are investing, but also make the best case for why how to help Marylanders and why we need to move forward to the next step of actually cultivating, processing, and distributing this medicine for people who can really actually improve their quality of life.
So, I mean, it also seems to me, what I kind of was really taken aback as I looked at all these, I looked at every company here this morning and who's involved in which company and many are from New Jersey and Canada who have been in this business a while and others from Colorado. Are in this business, but the numbers of people who were in law enforcement and in the circles of political power who lobbied against this are now vying to get the contracts.
So let me start, and then I know Demetrius is going to want to chime in. First of all, you have to look at – this is a generational movement here. This is not something that's going to happen overnight. And you look at what's happening around the country. About half the states in the country right now have some sort of medicinal or recreational use of cannabis, about half. And it's growing every day, every year it's growing. But the fact is that the statistics are clear, that the evidence is clear, that the science is clear. And then I'm going to talk about two different things.
The first
is that the science is clear that this can be used to really benefit people who either – whether it's people who have problems with cancer or problems with other kinds
multiple
of
sclerosis,
multiple sclerosis, cataracts,
seizures, all types of
things. So epilepsy. So it's clear that we have to turn this, for all intents and purposes, from a Schedule I to a Schedule II drug, which the federal government has not done, but the state of Maryland has, for all intents and purposes, tried to do that. But number two, and this is something that comes from our medical board and from the physicians who are advising Demetrius and his team, which is that there are – we have a real problem, particularly here in Maryland, with opioid addiction. And there is clear evidence that you can use cannabis for many of the same things that you prescribe opioids for and reduce it simply by stopping to prescribe those kinds of medicines.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a first defense, when a patient sees a physician, rather than going straight to the opiate, right now the cannabis would be tried first, and if a patient reacts well to the cannabis, then there's no need to put them on opiates. So hopefully we can cut down on the opiate use. That would be a big thing.
And that all comes, again, from the medical board, which – correct me if I'm wrong, but you have a team of about 10 physicians underneath of a medical director who was basically advising and talking about the efficacy, safety, and stability of products so that they can be recommended appropriately for cannabis use.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like you also need expertise from people who actually know how to grow it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've put together a team of growers from in-state and both out-of-state. We've partnered up with a company out of Colorado, and they were the first recreational sale and medical sale in Colorado. So they've partnered up with us to help bring their expertise here to Maryland, and we've put together a good group of growers who really are going to rock this thing if we get the license. And, you know, that's our goal, is to make sure that we can get quality product and consistent product to our patients.
So an indelicate question, but, I mean, how much does political influence play and who gets these contracts? I mean, because I understand that the bids themselves are blind. I mean,
yes.
Your name's not on it, but they read the bids and allegedly, objectively say this bid is stronger than this bid, not
right.
Who's inside the bid.
So what they've done with
but
the
if
application –
if you look at the Washington Post article, we know who's in every bid, just about.
Right. So what they've done with this application is what they've told us they're going to do is take the application, break it down into different areas of expertise, send it off to different experts, have them grade it, give it back as a collective to the commission, and the commission will make its decision. All of the applications were redacted, so there's no names. There's, you know, there's no favors. There's no nothing. It comes down to who's going
to
have the strongest application.
Nobody would identify who anybody is. It doesn't say, like, I'm doing this in Harford County. I'm doing this in Baltimore County. I'm doing this in Baltimore City or whatever else.
The people who are grading it should know none of that information.
I'm not sure if they know exactly locations if people put in, but maybe not.
I mean, look.
It's supposed to be completely redacted. Yeah.
So that's what our understanding is. And the question is – and you raise a good question is, what is the political influence involved? And in theory, there should be none. In theory, it should be simply be, you know, you want to have obviously perspectives from people who understand the government process and regulatory process and regulatory compliance. And that's why you hire people who have that kind of political experience or law enforcement experience for that matter. But the truth of the matter is that every single group is trying to make sure that they are creating an application that is the best possible quality product. I watched from somewhat of a distance. Demetrius put together his team And I will tell you that I was floored by the amount of work, ingenuity, and thoughtfulness that they put in. So if that's what all these other teams did, of course, everybody wants to figure out how to get a leg up. The question is, how do you do that?
Well, because, I mean, I'm going to talk about the leg up and the amount of money that's involved in this in a minute. But part of it is I read some other articles that only 1% of all the contracts nationwide so far, whether it's growers or processors or distributors, have gone to anybody of color or especially black folks, 1%. Yet 90%, 75% in most communities of the arrests and people going to jail for marijuana are black, where white kids smoke dope all the time and never go to jail. Black kids smoke dope actually in numbers that are less than whites but go to jail more often. But in the process of legalization of making potentially millions of dollars, they're left out of the process.
Right, and that's great that you bring that up. So our team is majority minority owned. So we have people of all different races and sex and everything involved. So for us, that's
can't,
not the case.
Unfortunately, we can't tell you them on, here because we
it's
can't
part of our,
necessarily
right,
identify
right.
people.
Right. But you're right. You're absolutely right. So that is one of the things that the state is looking for. I believe that they want to see a well-rounded group. And
so Demetrius is being very modest. He comes from – he comes out of Baltimore City. And when he made a decision to basically sell his business and mortgage his entire life to invest in putting together a team to do this, he decided he wanted to give back to the community where he grew up. So he found a venue right around the corner from where he grew up and decided to start there and start working on community support. This is a minority community that he lives in, that he lived in, and he had basically gone knocking door to door to get community support. And one of the things that they are very excited about, if in fact comes to where he wants to locate his facility, is that the number of jobs that will be available to those community members. Unfortunately, you know, as a criminal defense lawyer in my other life, Mark, I've been dealing with the expungement issues, which we can talk about some other time. But in order to be part of one of these facilities, you do have to go through a criminal background check. That might be an issue for many of these different groups, not just Green Labs. But let me leave it to Demetrius to talk about the fact that he wants to bring his community to the status that he believes it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. John is right. I've went to the community associations in our neighborhood, and I've received support from both of them that surround us. And I think they're really – it was surprising to see how excited they are to have us there. You know, when you first reach out to them, you really don't know what to expect or, you know, what their outlook is going to be. And, you know, after sitting down with them and explaining our game plan and what our vision of the company – They were really interested, and they're happy to have us, and they were able to lend us their support, and we're excited to hopefully get this license and be able to do things for the community and involve everyone.
We don't have to get into a whole discussion now about all that, about people not being able to be ex-felons and working on this, which I think is an absurdity, which makes no sense at all to me, that we demonize people who've done time and come out and trying to do right.
We're moving in the right direction though on that, so we can talk about that some other time.
Yeah, another time. A little too slowly for my purposes, but
agreed.
But the other thing is that this right now nationwide, the medical marijuana business, is a $4.4 billion business. The majority of that money right now resides in Colorado, $3.8 billion, and then it's different fluctuations throughout the country that have them.
Right.
So this has the potential in Maryland to be, in the beginning, of 20-some point million-dollar business, and it can go into easy nine figures, over the coming decade. So, I mean, there's a reason people are vying for this. This is a huge nut for somebody, some buddies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's no secret. The money is there for the industry. So it's very competitive, and it's a matter of putting together a strong team and, you know, so just being able to deliver on your promises.
Some of the ancillary opportunities that are going to be out there, Mark, are, for example, security contracts, transportation contracts, there are going to be quality assurance contracts. Any of those, all of those should be looked at by minority business enterprises as well as minority investor enterprises as places to both be successful and to make business. And I can tell you that one of the things that knowing state government pretty well and the deep interest in expanding minority participation in lots of different businesses is that I would recommend and advise Green Labs, I would advise any client that I had in this area to look at those businesses because there are opportunities there. I would also hope that this grading program and process that's going on right now in the state is actually – and the commission is actually looking at diversity as a major issue to make sure that we are, in fact, treating everybody appropriately.
So what about where the process is now? The articles I've read recently said it's going to happen at the end of July. And clearly we were talking before you jumped in the studio this could take go into the fall. I mean, A, why do you think it's taking so long to get this done? And B, where are we now?
I think that it's the. I would leave it at. I would say any day now.
Because
like initially it was you know it was February and then it went to April and then we were saying June. So I'm just going to say at this point it's any day. I don't know exactly why it's taking so long. I'm not sure if the commission knows why it's taking so long. Someone's got to know, but I believe it's a state. Having to get itself together and maybe just be ready to police the industry.
Yeah, as also as I said earlier, it's been interesting seeing who's applied for this and the numbers of people who have real access to power. But we talked about that a little earlier, and I think that's be interesting to see how this ends up. When these decisions are made, they're final? There's no appeals? They're done? How does that work?
As far as we know, no. They're final.
So there are 100 and... How many people are applying for the 50
47.
Slots? So there's 147, but there's been reports that some of them have already been disqualified of applying for cultivation licenses. We don't know anything for sure because obviously everything is confidential within the commission. But
and there are fewer people applying for processing.
Yeah, about 60 or so.
And that goes to 9 people?
15. Yep.
So processing as well?
Yep.
And distribution?
109 total could be. That's dispensaries.
Dispensaries, I mean to say. Yep. Distribution sounds like we're on the corner. dispensaries and how many people are applying for that?
Over 900.
Wow.
But you have to look at that. It's
and all those are in. Well, there's no more room for people to go in.
No, it's closed.
Right now it's closed until they decide to expand the program.
But right.
Then there's about 1,000 different groups that have applied for dispensaries. But the rules and the regulations are pretty clear that you can only apply – you can only accept one – license, one dispensary license, but you can apply for as many as you want. But there's only 2 per legislative district. Legislative electoral district.
Gotcha. Sort of.
So what you could do is if you have the means. This is not what Demetrius's company did, because they're going for cultivation, not dispensary. But if you're a dispensary. Then you can apply for one in every legislative district in the state. You can apply for up to 47 of them. And many groups have done that. So that's just one.
Right. And I think the reason why so many applicants did bid for a dispensary license is because the credentials to get a license are much lower. You only have to have a couple bucks to open a dispensary. You don't have to have millions of dollars. As to where the cultivators, you know, for example, we have a 100,000 square foot facility that we've secured for over 2 years now. And, you know, for a dispensary, you don't have to have something like that. You can get your license and then worry about finding a building.
And for you, it's you have your end is going to be growing it, which means land. Is this in the city? Is your license?
Indoor.
Ours will be in warehouse space. We have a 100,000 square feet of warehouse space.
Well, this is fascinating. We've learned a lot here, and we look forward to seeing how this
turns out.
And we look forward to talking to you again. Demetrios Kaforos is CEO and founder of Green Labs, Inc. John Carden, a former state delegate, is the lawyer attached to this group in advising them. And there are many, many groups. And we'll actually link to the Washington Post articles that lists every group that's vying for this. Plus all the other interesting stuff in charts. It was probably the best article I've seen written about it so far. And they came out June 25th. We will link to that article. Thank you both so much for coming by the studios today.
Thank you.
We have to take a short break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll talk to investigative journalist Shane Bauer about the time he spent undercover as a corrections officer in a private prison, exposing conditions in that prison. Before we get to break, I want to let you know about an upcoming event in Baltimore. The Rise of Charm City, WEAA's innovative new documentary audio series, produced in partnership with the Association of Independents in Radio, is wrapping up its inaugural 12-episode season. To celebrate that, WEAA and the show's creator, Stacia Brown, invite you to an elegant evening of live storytelling that honors the history of some of Baltimore City's most beloved businesses and neighborhoods. The event's taking place on Thursday, July 14th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Frederick Douglass Isaac Myers Maritime Museum. Dessert and wine reception will follow. You can get tickets and information by getting on Facebook and checking out Baltimore, The Rise of Charm City. Do join us there.